Money FM 89.3, best of your money. Money and Me on Your Money, only on Money FM 89.3.
Welcome to Money and Me. I'm Michelle Martin. Luno is a cryptocurrency platform that was in the news a couple of weeks back because they launched an official direct SGD bank transfer. If you've ever tried to buy Bitcoin or you hear conversations from beginners around cryptocurrency, a common sticking point is, how do I turn my fiat into a coin? How many different agencies do I have to sign up with before I can actually, you know, get my fiat into the system and buy cryptocurrency, whether it's Ether or Litecoin or Ripple or USD or Bitcoin Cash or Bitcoin, which, by the way, are all the coins currently offered by Luno. So what does this mean if you have an official direct SGD bank transfer? Well, it means that you don't have to sign up with another platform to get your Singapore dollars into your cryptocurrency accounts, and that you can add funds to your crypto wallet from your bank account. I've tried Luno. I downloaded it myself, and it says to make your deposit, you need to sign into your bank and add Luno as a payee to deposit funds using the details that they give you, including, you know, the bank name, the account number, and the amount. So a little bit different from PayPal, where it's sort of, you know, one click and you get your funds into a certain account. So a little bit of a learning curve. But Sherry Koh, Country Manager for Singapore, Global Expansion Manager for Luno, is joining me today. So we get a quick primer on investing in crypto. Good morning, Sherry. Good of you to join us.
Thank you, Michelle. Good morning.
Okay, so I was looking at the numbers today. Bitcoin trading at about 54,283. That's over 20% below the $69,000 high that it reached just 3 weeks ago. Ethereum trading down 1.23% to 4,044. And some say testing a critical uptrend support level near 3,900, coming from March 2020's $88.20 low. So, you know, the adage about volatility in trading and understanding what you're getting into certainly holds in the crypto world, where, by the way, there is a new coin, a tiny cryptocurrency coin called Omicron, of course, and that is rocketing some 500% simply because of the association with the virus that's plaguing the world right now, or the whole world is worried about. So Omicron, this tiny coin, adding 500% in the days since WHO has named the new COVID-19 variant, and that, for many people, I think, recalls the, you know, sudden rise and fall of the Squid Game inspired cryptocurrency last month. So a lot to get through to navigate crypto markets. A lot of volatility, a lot of new upstarts coming up as well. But some wonder, is it too late to get started at all, to jump on the crypto bandwagon where we've seen so much growth of crypto over the past year?
Thank you, Michelle. I think just a personal opinion here. I think when it comes to, I mean, not just cryptocurrency, but investment generally, I don't think it's always, I mean, it's never too late to start somewhere. Specific to cryptocurrency, in fact, some may argue that it's still very much in infancy stage. Mm-hmm. So definitely there's lots of like growth potential ahead, a lot of opportunity ahead. So it's really difficult to say that it's too late to jump onto the bandwagon right now. I think, in fact, if you know anyone is thinking about it, I think people should start taking like concrete actions to start to get more better understanding about cryptocurrency, and, you know, just lay out the concrete actions that you should be taking on to start to just get started properly.
All right. So I actually downloaded Luno so I could test it out and see what it was like. And I see you have sort of minimum amount deposits of $100. So to the question, how much would be the minimum for an investor to get started? Is it generally around 100?
Now, to be honest, I think this is a very interesting dialogue that I have with most of my relatives and friends even. So I think a general myth to debunk here is that you don't actually have to buy an entire coin. So I think a lot of people, they don't get started because they are under the notion that, you know, if you want to get started, for instance, on Bitcoin, you need to, for instance, get really like at least like USD 50K just to get one whole Bitcoin. Right. You don't actually need to do that. You can actually just buy a portion of it. So if you're just ready, I mean, let's say you're just ready to buy like $100 worth of Bitcoin, that gets you a portion of the Bitcoin itself. So that's actually that's actually more than enough. So just back to your specific question, lots of platforms allow you to start at a very low rate. So don't worry about, you know, having to set aside like huge minimum amounts just to get started somewhere.
But you have to be sure whether you're actually getting a fractional amount of a coin, or, you know, whether or not you're buying some sort of synthetic product that is not a coin that cannot be transferred out to a cold wallet, right?
Yes, correct. So I think, again, I think for anyone who is very new to cryptocurrency, I think when it comes to a new investment activity, any activity is safer when you try to learn more about it before getting involved. So I think one of the first few actions for someone new to cryptocurrency to take is you definitely need to consult several sources, spend more time learning about it, and then also not just learning about cryptocurrency as an investment itself, you also need to spend more time learning about the kind of platform that you want to use.
Mm.
And you have a platform in mind, you know, always go do research about it, because I mean, ultimately, you are actually entrusting your money with this platform. So these are the things that you should really take a look, look out for. So I think when it comes to choosing the kind of platform that you want to deal with,
mm-hmm.
Just to share some things that I personally look out for when it comes to choosing cryptocurrency platforms or investment platforms. So a few factors, right? I mean, firstly, the credibility. So when you're engaging the services of a platform, it is important that you as a consumer yourself find confidence in dealing with the company itself. So look out for platforms that are big on regulation, compliance, have a good reputation generally with regulators or in the press itself. So that's the first factor to look out for. Something to look out for as well, security. Look out for platforms that actually go the extra mile to keep your money safe with proper security assets, you know. Some questions that I typically ask myself would be whether or not the platform do what they can to protect your privacy and security of your assets. Does the platform actually have features like, you know, 2FA authentication, password encryption, just to actually help you to prevent unauthorized access into your account? And then something to look out for as well is, you know, what kind of features and fees are out there that the platform actually offer. I think generally everyone loves a good deal, but it's important that, you know, you shouldn't be just focusing on whether or not the fees is the lowest. So one analogy that I always like to share with people is that, you know, it's the same thing that you're looking for a good hair salon. You don't always go for the cheapest. You can actually go for the hair salon that gives you the best, you know, service experience you're comfortable with, and then also provides the services that meet your needs and one that offers the experience that you actually enjoy. So understanding the features of the platform and determining what they are offering, is whether or not they are offering what you're looking for, is really important. So let's say if you're a very sophisticated trader, you should look for something that gives you, you know, sophisticated like trading support, that gives you charting capabilities and so on. But if you're someone that is extremely new and is looking for something simple to understand and not too overwhelming for yourself, look out for platforms that are simple, easy to understand, has a simple user interface. Overall, you must actually enjoy the user experience and find comfort in it. And then when it comes to fees, just make sure you understand what you're paying for. Look out for platforms with transparent pricing structure or transparent way of charging. So I think the list of factors to look out for, I can go on and on and on, but I think these are some of the main ones that I look for. And I think overarching general guidance here is that if something actually looks too good to be true or sounds too good to be true, it probably is.
Always wise words, sir.
Yeah.
Some investors look for platforms that allow them to do more with their coins than just buy them, but to stake them or make money off them. What are your thoughts on crypto investing and the world of staking or investing even in DeFi projects?
DeFi project is I think DeFi and staking, these are really, really new concepts in the crypto world. I can just very briefly explain it as, like, you know, for DeFi, what it actually means is decentralized finance in short. So in DeFi, what actually happens is that a smart contract actually replaces the financial institution in an overall transaction, where a contract actually runs as programmed and allows transactions to take place between two parties directly without a, you know, entity or company as the middleman. So I think in sum, it describes this new system where it uses cryptocurrencies and smart contracts to provide services that remove the entire need for intermediaries and also facilitates more open and inclusive participation. So anyone can actually, you know, create a DeFi app, anyone can use them, anyone can actually have access to DeFi services. Some of the common use cases that we currently see right now would be, you know, decentralized exchanges such as Aswap, Uniswap, and then we also see the emergence of lending and borrowing platforms that use smart contracts to replace intermediaries such as banks to manage lending that connects borrowers and lenders of cryptocurrency. So that is DeFi. And when it comes to staking, I think broadly, we can just, you know, just simply understand it as a way to get passive income or DeFi. So it is a way for people to earn rewards on their cryptocurrency holdings. So think of it as like a fixed deposit product where you actually have your capital in cryptocurrency locked up for in return of a yield after a period of time. However, in the case of staking, your returns are not guaranteed for sure. Mm-hmm. Interest yields offered are extremely volatile. And also considering that, you know, you locked up the amount of, you know, of cryptocurrency as initial capital. And also that knowing that your cryptocurrency value is extremely volatile, if your stake assets suffer a large price drop over time, the loss of the value could actually outweigh any interest you earn on them eventually. So overall, like I said, you know, when it comes to DeFi and staking, they are relatively very, very new concepts. And what this means is that the newness of it could actually mean that, you know, negative outcomes can actually happen unexpectedly. So unlike services that we now engage so much with the centralized financial system, I think when it comes to DeFi platforms and generally, you have to understand that there's actually no proper official avenue for financial recourse to happen should something happen. So I think all in all, again, you know, when it comes to such new topics, DeFi, staking, lots of research still needs to be done. Again, if something sounds too good to be true, it probably is. So always make sure that you do enough research before putting money into such new financial instruments.
That is a great primer, Sherry. A great overview, actually, of DeFi and staking. So thank you very much for that. When I started the show, I talked about this obscure Omicron coin. So it's named like the COVID-19 variant. And, you know, we've seen that price of the cryptocurrency increase sevenfold since this new virus mutation out of Africa was designated really variant of concern, and something that its surge is going to be short-lived, perhaps like many a fad coin before it. You know, we know the Shiba Inu, and that gained notoriety for even lesser reasons than, you know, being named after the latest COVID-19 pandemic scare. So whether or not Omicron has a chance to stay afloat, we've seen Bitcoin and Ethereum really suffering. Last week, for example, Bitcoin price down 5% in a matter of hours, taking its decline from all-time highs of around 69,000 per Bitcoin to 20% and plunging Bitcoin to a technical bear market that has really wiped billions from the combined cryptocurrency market cap. So the question is, as a new investor, are there any parallels from conventional investing, in your opinion, Sherry, that one can apply to crypto investing and understanding this fast-changing market?
I think, like, you set up a perfect example, and like this whole explanation where like something new happened and then a new coin coming in and out, and then lots of changes in terms of the pricing always happen. So I think it's quite important to understand that as a new cryptocurrency investor, it's actually not the wisest to consider, you know, using a buying low, sell high kind of strategy. I think when it comes to crypto investing, you have to understand that there are lots of, you know, investment strategies and approaches that you can actually adopt here. Some of them, you know, probably, yes, I mean, there's a small group of them that probably made a sum by doing this whole like buy low, sell high strategy. But there's lots of other strategies that you can actually think about. You know, some actually buy a lump sum and then store it securely over a long term and long range, buying on the belief that the value of cryptocurrency has not hit its peak. So, and some of them actually do dollar cost averaging. So this is an approach that probably some people can actually consider, because I think looking at how the volatility of cryptocurrency is, making regular investments at the same amount at repeated intervals can actually help, you know, hedge against major market movements, help you avoid, you know, mistiming the market and all. So again, you know, when it comes to going into this whole cryptocurrency investing, it's important to go through the usual thought process that you take as you consider new investments, right? And I think some of the factors, there are lots of factors of consideration that you can think of, and they are largely personal and dependent on your individual circumstances. So the usual questions that you ask yourself, you know, what's your actual tolerance for risk? Are you actually ready to stomach that big price of changes and all? and the amount of time that you want to commit in, you know, just managing your investment, putting in that amount of money just to play with that investment itself. And of course, the usual, you know, only invest in things that you understand. Do you actually understand cryptocurrency well? Do you understand what you're going in for when you're going to like Bitcoin, Ethereum? Don't borrow to invest. Don't invest more than you can afford. So actually, if you hear what I just said, it's actually quite the usual factors of consideration when it comes to dealing with any investment. So I would just urge people to just think of cryptocurrency investing as, you know, the kind of things that you go through for any kind of investments, for any kind of other financial assets as well.
All right, Sherry, you know, the headlines all scream Singapore has grand ambitions to become a global crypto hub. We know that nations differ in terms of their approach to crypto. China's cracked down on large amounts of activity recently. Japan has just recently allowed dedicated crypto investment funds. El Salvador, we know, has embraced Bitcoin as legal tender. And in the U.S., there are a plethora of options for investing in the burgeoning asset class. So here in Singapore, we heard recently at the Singapore FinTech Festival, Ravi Menon saying Singapore wants to be well positioned for 2030 when an economy of tokenization may come. So this is really interesting. In fact, I'm moderating a discussion on tokenization in the property world at an upcoming event soon, and you can check that out. I'll probably put that on my social media pages. But Sherry, the question for you is, what is your take on the outlook of the crypto sector in Singapore, and what does this mean for investors? Is it, you know, currently mainly something for accredited investors, or something that we can all look forward to capitalizing on?
I think 2021 itself has been exceptionally exciting for the crypto market. I mean, just some of the headlines that you talk about the government's positions on cryptocurrency. We've also seen quite a few like major developments on the private sector side of things as well. I mean, on the global level, we see big and familiar brand names venturing into the space, right? Like we saw Twitter becoming the first social platform to allow users to ask for tips in Bitcoin, PayPal introducing a function for users in the US to just buy, sell cryptocurrencies. And on the local level, we have seen quite a few like exciting movements as well. Like for instance, DBS venturing into this crypto space in a big way with its digital exchange, trust services for digital assets, and DBS also expressing plans to pursue further. And also we have also seen OCBC coming out to say that they actually have the same interest in pursuing the same area as well. So I think while not just on the private sector side, lots will also see like major milestones on the licensing frontier, like we've seen some of our fellow players getting in principle approvals or like licenses from the MAS to provide the services in Singapore. So I think all these trends and developments that we've seen all point towards one thing, which is the fact that we should actually expect increasing mass market adoption of crypto. So I think what that means is that, you know, we don't just see opportunities created just for accredited investors, institutional investors, but we also see lots of opportunities coming up for mass retail to be participating in this exciting sector. So I think we should definitely see more of such developments coming in the years to come. So it's actually important for people like us, men on streets, to just start keeping tabs on all these developments, getting in touch with the landscape, understanding what's going on, get involved when you are ready. And so, all in all, it's just to make sure that you're not left behind when the developments come fast and furious, because it might be too late eventually for you to just participate. So I think that's something that I would say.
Chatting with Luno, the first cryptocurrency platform to launch an official direct Singapore dollar bank transfer. So you don't have to sign up with another platform just to get your Singapore dollars into your cryptocurrency accounts. What are the coins they currently offer? Bitcoin, Ethereum, Litecoin, Ripple, USD. DC and Bitcoin Cash. So we talk about investing and the use of exchanges. I think a common question from retail investors might be, how safe is it to invest in an exchange that is domiciled outside of Singapore?
I think there's this general notion that it's not safe, but I would actually urge to tell people that it's actually quite safe and reliable to do that. I think having it domiciled elsewhere doesn't mean that it's not regulated here. I mean, ultimately, when it comes to interacting with any cryptocurrency platforms, one of the first few things that one should actually go about doing is that, you know, just go and check whether or not they are actually licensed or have that appropriate approvals or, you know, exemption to actually provide services to customers in Singapore. So some of the few sources that you can actually turn to is go to the MAS website. You know, they have the financial institution directory, or they actually have this list of entities that actually already have the appropriate exemption just to provide cryptocurrency services to customers in Singapore while they apply for their licenses. So I think these are two good sources to go to just to find comfort that you're actually dealing with an entity that is actually reliable and safe enough to deal with.
Great, great resource there. And another question is, you know, if it has to jump through the hoops, so to speak, of regulation, do cryptocurrency exchanges here lack some exciting new features of cryptocurrency exchanges elsewhere?
I don't think so. I'm personally of the view that, you know, it's very important to have regulatory clarity and regulations to help support the proper growth of cryptocurrency sector or any new emerging sector to just be general about it, because I think a regulatory framework is not there to curb innovation. It's actually there to facilitate innovation, just to make sure that consumers are actually dealing with innovation in a safe way. So don't worry about, you know, regulation curbing innovation, product innovation or services information. I mean, in fact, I think what the MAS here has done in the past has been quite a good job in terms of just trying to keep up with, you know, having the regulatory framework keep up with general innovation that's coming or general development that's coming.
All right. And final question, how do you see Singapore's role in this crypto space shaping up?
Singapore's role, a big one, definitely. I think Singapore as a global fintech hub or global financial center, lots of the other countries and markets actually look up to Singapore as a financial center, as a fintech hub when it comes to, you know, innovation and also when it comes to regulation formation as well. I think with that whole inception and introduction of the Payment Services Act, it's definitely a really great development and also a great booster to actually encourage lots of the other countries to actually move forward together. Another example that I can actually throw out here would be the whole introduction of the travel rule regulation requirements. So this is something that I think Singapore was actually one of the first government of the country to actually have that formally in place in an official regulatory framework. And with that, we actually start seeing lots of countries following suit as well. So I think overall, Singapore actually is playing a very good leading role just to make sure, you know, that regulation formation itself is really ahead. And then I think in terms of, I mean, like I said, when it comes to regulatory framework, regulatory formation, it's a really great booster and catalyst for innovations to come and developments to come.
All right. Great speaking with you, Sherry. Sherry Goh is Country Manager, Singapore Global Expansion Manager for Luno, joining us this morning in Money and Me as we try to understand the basics. And the key question, is it too late to invest in crypto?
Before acting on the information on Money FM, please consider if it's suitable for your own investment objectives, financial situation, and risk tolerance. To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg. Or download our audio app. That's AWEDIO. Available on Google Play or the App Store.